Hey there, and welcome to Endeavors. On today's show, I speak with Irish actress Hazel Doop on her breakthrough role in the Irish film Float Like a Butterfly. That's coming up on Endeavors.
You're listening to Endeavors Radio with your host from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Dan McKee.
If you're a filmmaker from another part of the world, it can be difficult at times to break into the North American market. And it can often happen a year or so after the film was released in your home country. One such film is Float Like a Butterfly. It's by Irish writer-director Carmel Winters, and follows the tale of a young Irish traveler who wants to be a boxer in 1970s Ireland. Her idol is Muhammad Ali. I spoke with the young star of the film, Hazel Doop, about talking about the film now, over a year after it came out, playing a traveler, boxing in Ireland, Irish film, Irish culture, Irish literature, everything Irish. Because as listeners know, I like Ireland, I like Irish things. Anyway, this is my conversation with actress Hazel Doop. Hazel Doop, hello, how are you today? How are you? Hello from Toronto to Dublin?
Hello, I'm good, thank you, really good. Better now that I'm being interviewed on the phone.
Yes, so your film is Float Like a Butterfly, and it got a lot of really amazing press over in Ireland, and now it's being released internationally. Was this a normal audition process for you? I heard a thing with Carmel, your director, saying she met you and she knew almost right away that you were right for the role of Francis.
Yeah. It wasn't very normal in terms of audition. No, we had about 5 years ago at this stage was my first audition, and it was actually in a boxing ring. And it was more kind of improvisational stuff and figuring out how relationships would work with the fathers, the options of the guys who might play my father. But there was also some other options as well. And we were just trying out family type things. And then I thought that they'd gone a different way after that. I thought that they'd chosen somebody else because they never came back to me. And then 2 years later, Carmel came back and asked for an interview with me, or a meeting type thing. And it was really obscure. She just asked me to sit down and do an improvisational scene while sorting out a deck of cards into their suits. It was very, very different to anything I've ever done before, any kind of audition. She asked me to do a few party tricks, a bit of singing here and there, some improvisational scenes, and she offered me the role within a week or within 2 days.
You've done a few projects before. There was Michael Inside and Peter and Wendy, but everyone's calling this your breakthrough. How are you dealing with the whirlwind of fame and success that's slowly coming your way, or quickly coming your way?
Well, it's no slowly does it. I'm happy with it being quite slow because, it's nice to... It's really the most important thing for me is that my character my portrayal of the character that I'm depicting rings true to people. So as long as I have people who are coming up to me and pouring their heart out and telling me how much they loved the movie and how much it resonated with them, that's my job done. And I couldn't ask for any more than that. I'm not a huge one for fame or anything like that, but there have been a few calls on the phone and stuff like that for new projects, so that's been nice.
But I know this film actually has a connection to Toronto because it won an award at the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah, it did. It won the Fabreschi Award at Toronto Film Festival. I didn't even realise it was eligible for an award. And nobody knew, literally nobody knew until the night of when Carmel said, live stream the award ceremony. And I hadn't even gotten a clue that they had asked her to stay on in Toronto because she was supposed to fly home, I think, a few days after we shoot, or after we screened anyway. And then she was like still in Toronto and I was gone home and I was like, why is she still there and I'm not there? And then she, yeah, I got to tune in for her awards acceptance speech. And it was really beautiful.
You play an aspiring boxer in this film. How did you go about training for that? What sort of, did you have to get yourself into a certain regimen?
Yeah, there was a few, obviously the first time that I got the audition, they asked in the email, is she able to box? And like everything, whenever an email comes in and asks, can she do something, I always turn to my mom and I'm like, we're starting boxing lessons next week. And so that happened. I started boxing lessons. And and I worked on it for a while and then kind of kept it up when I didn't get the outcome that I wanted from the first audition. And then when they came back, I was able to say that I had like kept it up. All the muscles were still there. Everything was like set to go. And then I had a training session with middleweight world champion, I'm pretty sure, Andy Lee, who's Irish, and he's amazing. And he taught me a lot. And it was just a really, really beautiful session that we had together. And then with Clara Fraher as well. She was, I think I have this right, she was sparring partner with Katie Taylor. And she showed me the ropes for 2 weeks and she was, literally showed me the ropes. I was on the rope the whole time, just trying to get my skips as good as possible. And that was really, really intense, but it was so much fun. I would give anything to do it again. It was the best time ever.
Did you actually end up watching any footage of Muhammad Ali?
I did, yeah. I watched his Rumble in the Jungle with, George Foreman, is it?
Is it Foreman or Fraser? One of the two. You might be right.
I don't know. It was a while ago. But, I watched that and kind of studied his movement because obviously Muhammad Ali is a huge inspiration to Frances, so she's going to be replicating anything she learns from, like, to do with boxing. It's from the TV, it's from having seen Muhammad Ali dance around the boxing ring. So yeah, I had to take a lot of inspiration from there, and I watched interviews with him and he's such a charismatic guy. There's like, yeah, I'm not surprised she's so in love with him.
Yeah. I forget where I heard it, but someone called this film sort of a reverse Billy Elliot.
Someone did.
And that is a film that I think is still so ingrained in British pop culture. For you as an actor and performer, being in the same sentence with a film that's as well known as that, how did you take that news?
It was pretty crazy. I think I heard it through the grapevine. I didn't actually, I didn't read it anywhere. So when I heard it, I was kind of like, what? Whoa. People think of those two as like to the same magnitude. It was amazing. It was pretty crazy. They're both universal stories. They're both like very easy to connect with, I think. Because at the end of the day, it's a story about humans. It's a story about family and doing what you love and not being held back by the people who you love most in the world. And taking the path that you need to take for yourself.
Would you say that there's a big boxing culture in Ireland?
I think it's definitely growing. I'm not like hugely into boxing. I do it a few times a month or a few times a year at this stage. But I would say it's growing from having amazing boxers come out of Ireland, emerge from Ireland, like Katie Taylor and Andy Lee, and there's plenty more emerging like now. But I would say it's growing. I think people are taking a definite interest in that field.
Because you got your film, and then you had that film last year with Florence Pugh, where she plays the female wrestler. All for the family, something like that.
What's it? What did you say it's called?
It's like Fighting for My Family. It's got her and Stephen Merchant. But she plays plays an aspiring female wrestler. I forget the name. But what do you think it says about our culture that we're into these sort of stories right now with sort of, you know, strong fighting type young female characters?
I think it says that we want a matriarchal hero in our lives, and that we have been let down by, or at least the people in these movies have been let down, and the people who are going to watch these movies, they will have been let down by somebody on the possibly on the parental side, of like on the male parental side, and it's really somebody who's instead of searching for that kind of patriarchal gratification, or like the satisfaction of pleasing your father, you're looking inwards towards yourself, and the fact that a woman is taking that torch and kind of like bringing it to the finish line is really showing how our society is changing. Yeah, I think it's amazing. I think it's so good that we can produce films like this, and they can actually like thrive and survive among like the millions of other films that are being produced, mass produced, and huge budget films as well. This wasn't a huge budget, so the fact that we've made it this far is incredible.
Your character is also a traveler in the film, and that's a group of people in a culture that I think still is maybe not fully understood, especially by people over here in North America. What did you learn about the traveling community and sort of maybe the misconceptions that society has about them?
I learned about humans again. I'm bringing it back to humans because we all are human, and I made so many friends on that set, many of which were travelers, and there was absolutely no distinction, absolutely none on set, between traveler or settled person. We were all one, we were all a big family. And it was kind of like we were all, like, we felt indigenous people. We felt as though we were indigenous people of Ireland. And on that set, it was just such a great community feel that there was no segregation between us. Yeah, we all kind of lived, like, even I remember a few days on set, or like pretty much the whole set, because it was like, I think it's 23 and a half days we're outside out of 25 days we were shooting outside, and there was a camp set up. So the art department set up this huge camp, and everything you see in the film is like really there. It was like set up for the whole shoot, and so much work went into it, and it really felt like home for those 25 days. It was incredible. We had like a spit fire in the middle, and like pots and pans that went over it, and they made this bread, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was like a some kind of like griddle bread, I think that's what it's called. And in between takes, Hilda, who plays Granny Flynn in it, and Noelle, who played Nellie, Aunt Nellie, they would be just sitting by the fire and like tossing the bread over, like flipping it over and like taking pieces of it, eating that. Like it just felt like we were back to nature where we were supposed to be. But yeah, we had such a good time, and I made so many friends on that set, so many family members that I'll hold really dear to me.
Would you consider yourself an outdoors person?
Definitely. At this point, I'm sitting my Leaving Cert, which probably a lot of whoever's listening to this won't understand, but it's kind of like the Irish version of the SATs, is that it?
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of studying, so I'm cooped up in my room all day. We're in school. I go into school at 8 a.m. and leave school at like 6 most days, and it's dark by the time I get out, and I'm always so complacent at the moment, like wanting to be outside, wanting to be by the beach or something. And I went out yesterday, it wasn't yesterday, it was last week, when the full moon was out, and I just like walked out onto the grass and just stood there watching the full moon, like grounding myself for a few minutes. It was so nice. Definitely an outdoorsy person.
You alluded to the relationship, they were trying to find the relationship with the father. And you spend, there's a lot of the film that's just you, Dana, who plays your father, and Johnny, who plays your brother. About maybe a third to a half of the film.
Yeah.
What kind of relationship did you form in that time? And as an actor, did you try to form it differently with Dana than you would with Johnny, for example?
Yeah, with Dara, it was kind of like, we had, from the very first time we met each other, we had this like instant kind of like uncle-niece connection. I don't know how, but it just happened that way. And everything down to the tiniest little thing, like our sense of humor, like just the way we played scenes together, just everything matched. And it was easy, it was very easy to go from that to suppressing that and showing, like, in between, or like during scenes, wanting, like showing that you wanted to have that kind of connection with somebody, but just not letting it happen for various reasons. So it was really nice that we had that, and the same with Johnny, really. But it was different. I was allowed to have that kind of connection with Johnny on screen, as opposed to with Dara. But yeah, I guess I didn't really approach it in any way particularly. I just kind of we just all became really, really close. Our first rehearsal together was pretty crazy. We went into a studio in Dublin and did like horseback races, like it was wheelbarrow races, that kind of thing, trying to team building games and stuff like that. So it was, yeah, we were a family before we even knew it.
And I know, how would you describe, I guess, Francis's relationship with Michael? It's very complicated.
Very complicated. I think Francis has, from when we meet her at 8 years old, and it's clear that she's got an incredible relationship with her dad. Her dad is like very supportive with boxing, whether or not he knows that that's what she wants to do as a career. But they have like a twinkle in their eye for each other, and it's just beautiful. And then something catastrophic happens, and her dad gets hauled away to jail. And when he comes back, he's a broken man, and Carmen and I have talked about this. We kind of assumed that like a lot of bad things would have definitely have happened to him in jail, considering the fact that he, like, the circumstances of everything that happened, and also his background. And he comes back a broken man, and he knows what can happen now at the hands of settled people and racist people and people who won't accept somebody for who they are. And he wants to protect his daughter from this, but doesn't know how to do it in a loving way anymore, and can only see red whenever she does anything against him. So, it is really, really complicated, but Francis really knows how to push his buttons as well. She knows how to kind of really get under his skin. But I think they're so alike, and that's why she knows. So, yeah.
You know, given how long Carmel spent working on this film and developing this, how much say did you get in perhaps creating the backstory of your character, or was it already all there for you?
Most of it was in the script. She's an absolutely incredible writer, an amazing director. She's wonderful. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better person to spend 25 days with. So I guess we read through the script, or skimmed through the script, like a good few times together, and made up a few little backstories for Frances. But she really, I know, and she spent like 6 years with this script before handing the reins over to somebody else, but she trusted me fully. And I don't know, I personally don't know if I'd be able to do that, spend 6 years with my baby and then just hand it over to somebody. But no, she's amazing. And she just let me run wild with it. And she liked the approach that I had as well, the fact that that I kind of internally sussed everything out instead of showing it really that much on screen. So she took out in different drafts of it, she took out chunks of dialogue and just replaced it with scenes of my face, which you'll see a lot in the movie. Yeah, the whole film kind of tracks my face, so if you don't like it, I'm sorry. But yeah.
Is it strange for you still talking about this? Because it's like it's just being released here in North America, but it came out, what, I think a year and a half ago in Ireland and the UK?
Yeah, I think it's been about, I want to say about a year at this stage, because we went to Toronto with it September of last year, I think. Yeah, September of last year. And, 2 years ago, 2018, September. And yeah, it's tracking with the film up until this point has just been, it's been crazy. And going to like different festivals and watching it over and over again, just kind of, it's a little bit scary. Because each time you find something new to correct about yourself or like to critique. So it's a bit scary in that way, but it's amazing that it's lived this long. Like, we just wanted to keep going and keep resonating with people for as long as possible.
How were the fight scenes for you? How closely did you work with Carmel and with Joe, the stunt coordinator?
Pretty closely. We tried to make, we did a rehearsal with Jamie, who played Eamon, and we made it very clear that there was to be obviously no contact. And a lot of, I feel like in a lot of cases it actually does look like we made contact, but I can assure you we didn't. And yeah, I think on the day it was very, very rainy, so there was a good chance that someone was going to slip and something was going to happen. But we managed to keep our hands to ourselves. It was a really, actually really fun day. I remember that was one of the days that it was like lively at sunset, even though it was raining. I was so excited to be pushed so far. So.
And did I read that this is actually sort of your second movie that had a bit of a boxing theme? Didn't one of your earlier films, what was it, Calm with Horses? Wasn't that about a boxer? Sort of?
I'm trying to think. Calm with Horses is more recent, so that's...
Oh, that's... sorry, yeah, no, yeah. What did it say here? Anyway. But I know you also have a couple of new projects coming up. What can you tell us about The Green Sea?
The Green Sea is a film about a girl who is kind of picked up by a stranger. And she takes her under her wing, but this stranger is a really very cynical person and like doesn't like her at all. And the only reason she's picked her up is because she's the person who's caused this accident, and she now has to take care of her for a little while. And it's about the relationship between those two people and how one brings the other, or how each of them bring each other to their like rightful destination and that kind of thing. So yeah, that'll hopefully be out. That was filmed a little bit after Float Like a Butterfly, so I went on from one shoot to the next, so it has taken a while from production to come into its full shape, but I think it should be hopefully around and now coming into festivals and the likes in the next year or so anyway.
It's funny, a lot of Irish films that seem to break into North America, whether it's Float Like a Butterfly or The Wind That Shakes the Barley, I know it's a popular one, are maybe a little bit on the depressing side, and yet they do give this whiff of an atmosphere of hope.
Yeah.
What is about maybe Irish culture or Irish life that pushes these films to the forefront in this way?
Well, even in the same in Ireland, We just recently had the first TV screening, which was like the day before New Year's, I think, in Ireland. And there were so many people, the same kind of situation in we had in Toronto when we went and screened there. There were people coming up to myself and Carmel and just pouring their hearts out and telling their story. And I think it's a triumphant film in a way that you wouldn't expect. The ending is quite sad, but it's so hopeful in that, like, there isn't necessarily a need for somebody to be next to you in order for them to love you or in order to gain their support. And all you really need is yourself. I think that's such a beautiful message, for me anyway, because anything I've been through, I've always tried to be there for myself as much as possible. And obviously you can get confirmation from everybody else that, oh, you're doing great, you're gonna be grand. It's that inner kind of just acceptance of, like, who you are that I think is the most hopeful thing of all, because at the end of the day, and not to sound depressing or anything, but you're the one that's going to be there for yourself in those hard times. And I love the fact that this film's being made about that.
But also, Ireland has a very strong literary history. You think of Oscar Wilde, James Joyce. You mentioned that Carmel's a very good writer. What do you attribute that to? Is it just the sort of the culture of sitting around and telling stories?
Yeah, definitely. We have so much folklore in Ireland. There are so many stories that have been passed down through the generations. There's, Celtic stories. So much mythology that we hold, and it comes from being so close to such magical scenery, I think, as well. And Irish people as a whole, I don't know, I think we're pretty cool. So it also comes from being around those kinds of people and having the kind of relationships that you do with them. And yeah, you're right, actually. Our screenwriting and poem writing or poetry is pretty good. I think we have beautiful set up in Ireland.
On the tradition of great writers, who were some of your favorite writers growing up?
Just authors.
Yeah.
I actually didn't read much growing up, unfortunately. My mom tried to get me into it, but I just wasn't having any of it. I was definitely more into movies than I was into books. I loved, of course, everybody loved Roald Dahl. Let me think. I liked Louise Renison. She made me laugh out loud, and not a lot of books can do that. She wrote the series of books connected to Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging. That's a film. It's a British film. It's quite fun as well. But yeah, those books made me laugh out loud. And nothing, well, except for films, has ever made me do that before. And people, sorry. I mean, no books have ever made me do that before. God, I sound like such a dull person. I would say those two, probably. I'm trying to think of anybody else that I used to read. We used to read loads of books in school, but I just did so many activities that I never, ever had time for reading. The only time I would read is if my mom, like, sat down beside me and, like, read me stories and I was going to sleep.
And I know you talk about, for acting in general, but for this film as well, you talk about Saoirse Ronan as an inspiration, and people did compare you to her as well. And you know, I know you've also talked about Jodie Foster and Toni Collette. What is it about those three women that you admire so much as actors and as performers?
Well, Saoirse has been obviously in the public eye since she was about 11. And I think it's just at her first she was nominated for an Oscar for it anyway, but Atonement just stuck with me for so long. Ever since I first saw it, her performance is unreal in it. And she's still going today. She's gone through so many years of just keeping to herself, keeping this kind of low profile, but still being one of the best out there. That's kind of what I aspire to be. And with Toni Collette, I recently watched, a few years ago, watched Hereditary when it came out, and I went to see it like four times in cinemas. She was just so incredible to me. There was nothing I could have faulted about her performance. It was unbelievable. And there's a particular scene in that where she's sitting at a table. I don't know if you've seen Hereditary, have you?
No.
No. she's sitting at a table and she's giving out to one of her children, and it just struck me, and the way she moved her face was just unlike anything I'd ever seen. She's a magician when it comes to behind the camera or on screen. And yeah, Jodie Foster is, obviously everyone knows how amazing she is, but yeah, she's kind of, obviously she started out as a kid as well, and has kept a low profile while still being one of the best in the world. And that's, yeah, that's really where I get my inspiration from, because you can, there's, obviously fame is a part of being a successful actor, but there are ways to keep yourself from being in the public eye too much. I don't know. I hope that's how it goes for me.
Anna, it seems just like in Europe, there's a different approach and relationship to fame. Like Hollywood, you've got paparazzi everywhere, and it just seems in Europe that nobody really cares that much in the same way.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely don't. It's just not a thing for me. I don't really sway either way. I know you obviously have to accept it if you want to be successful, but yeah, I think you're right. In Europe, it's more of a focus on the art and just making art. And the way that you continue to make art is by getting your name out there and that kind of thing. So there is a little bit of that, obviously, but yeah, nobody does anything scandalous just to be in the magazines or anything like that.
Talking about Saoirse, do you think this is the year she wins the Oscar?
I do. I don't know why. I still haven't seen Little Women. I really, really, really want to see it, but I feel like it's going to break my heart so bad, so I've been putting it off. But I don't know. Who else is up for the Oscar? I can't remember.
In her category, Renee Zellweger, who's the slight favorite right now, for playing Judy Garland. Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story, yes. Can't remember the other two off the top of my head.
I actually haven't seen any of those this year. So I guess I can't say that she's definitely going to win the Oscar, but I would put my money on it.
And also, just speaking of Jodie, you know, she's transitioned into directing recently. Yeah. Is that a dream you have in the future, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. I just recently worked with an also transitioned actor to director who's unbelievably talented. Her name's Eva Berthizel. And she is an absolutely beautiful actress on screen, and then translates that into directing like I have never seen before, because I've never worked with an actor turned director. And she just knew things that generally directors don't know, which makes sense, but it also just, it reinforces in your mind that you're with someone who's been through this. And and I want to be that kind of person for somebody. I want to be able to shoot my own movie and have somebody know that I've been there.
Speaking of Irish culture, I always identify the music of Ireland. I've always loved it. I grew up listening to a lot of Celtic music.
You mean traditional music?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like Canadian Celtic bands from the East Coast, Great Big Sea, but I've seen both Glenn Hansard and Damien Dempsey live, who I really love. And the music for me did stand out in this film. And I know you actually performed, I think by my account, it was in four songs, whether it was by yourself or with other cast members. Was singing always an aspiration for you? What was that conversation like with Carmel about performing?
Well, it wasn't. She only knew that I could sing from the meeting that we had, and she didn't expect me to like have any kind of voice whatsoever. She just asked me to sing a song, and she knew from then that I obviously had some kind of tune to my voice. But she asked me one day. There was a scene where I was supposed to be shadow boxing under like an underpass. And that location, because it had been raining so much the previous night, was totally flooded. And even though it was sunny that morning and it was so beautiful, we couldn't film there. So we set up camp next to a lake, and that just didn't seem right for her. She was like, she wasn't happy about me shadow boxing there. She thought it was too beautiful. It wasn't, just wasn't the right feeling. And she took me aside and asked me, Hazel, have you, this is going to sound really random, but have you ever written a song? And I was like, yeah, I have. And she was like, okay. And by any chance, have you written a song with a butterfly anywhere in it? And just by chance, I actually had written a song with a butterfly in it. That was like the main theme of the song. And I was able to say, yeah, I have. And actually, my dad told me the other day that if I sang the song for you, that he'd put it in the film, or that you'd put it in the film. And she was like, can I hear it? And as soon as I started singing, she was like, yeah, that's the one. Because she had been trawling through the, it was fate. So she had been trawling through the internet for hours, for years actually. She said ever since she wrote the film, she'd been looking for a song with a butterfly in the lyrics somewhere. But I hadn't found the right one. And yeah, it's fate.
And that song is Chasing Butterflies, right? That's the name of it?
Yeah.
What do you like about butterflies then, on that note?
That's a good question. I like that question. Oh my god, I've never asked that question before. I like their colours, obviously. I have, actually, I went to a butterfly farm with my grandmother, and that sticks out to me. My mom, my grandmother bought us, myself and my sister, these framed butterflies. So obviously butterflies die after a few days. But these were ones that had died like peacefully and had been put into frames, and I have some in my room, and they're just so beautiful, and they always remind me to think about nature when I get too like flustered or caught up in the everyday. I love butterflies. I think it's so beautiful that they spend so long building up to emerging into this really, really beautiful creation, and then only stay here for a few days. I think it's so nice that, like, such a quality life was so short. I just think that's so cool.
Is the Irish musical tradition similar to the Irish literary tradition? It just comes from folklore and storytelling and Ceilidhs and all that?
I don't know. I study music in school, so I think it's definitely passed down by ear. All the tunes, they're definitely passed down by ear, at least traditional tunes. And we have loads. There's so many ballads and lullaby songs and working songs and everything like that. So many of them are in Irish as well. They're Oscailga. And yeah, a lot of them do come from, there's actually a really beautiful song called An Mhaoibh Dún Mhaire, and it's about a woman who comes in from the sea, and she's a mermaid, and she comes in and has a crown, and she's like, she uses this crown obviously to be a mermaid, but when the person that she falls in love with takes a crown and hides it, she forgets where she comes from. And then she has a family with this man, and they have their children. And then one day, one of her children goes and finds the crown in a little treasure box and brings it to her, and she remembers everything and just has to go back to sea. And it's a really sad song, but it's really, really beautiful. And you should look it up if you get a chance. It's called An Mhaoibh Dún Mhaire. I don't know if you'll be able to spell that, but
I have friends who can speak some Gaelic, so I'll...
Okay, cool.
We hear especially young female actresses making the transition into music. Are we ever going to see a Hazel Dupe LP in the future?
That's funny, because my brother just finished the video for it. My brother's a cinematographer, so he is just finished up filming or editing a video for a little project we did together. I made up a song one day and recorded it, and then I got a professional recorder, but I don't know what I'm going to do with that yet, so we'll see. Hopefully it'll be out on Spotify and all those kinds of things soon. I'm just kind of like working through a few things, so yeah, you definitely may see me with an LP soon.
You mentioned the shoot was 25 days.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, or I guess your favorite scene or memory, and then your toughest scene in memory.
Okay. My favorite scene, I really liked the scenes in the second camp that you see Francis in. Even though that camp was so like dark and gloomy and everything like that, I just really enjoyed the atmosphere. I thought it was really true and gritty and everything like that. And I loved as well the final scene that you see Francis in, where she's punching the living daylights out of somebody. I love that scene. That was so much fun to film. And then my least favourite scene, or my toughest scene. You've probably seen the film, have you?
Yes.
Yeah, so you might know it's the scene where she skins the rabbits. So that was definitely really tough for me. I was kind of... When I'm afraid of things, I kind of just pretend they're not going to happen. So for the whole shoot, I was like, that scene won't happen. Carol will just take it out. It's okay. And then it got to the day where it was supposed to happen, and it hadn't been on the call sheet, so I had no idea. And Carmel comes up to me and goes, "Today's the day, Hazel." And I was like, "Oh no!" So that scene was pretty damn tough. I just remember while I was doing the deed, just like tears coming down from my eyes onto the floor, and they just wouldn't stop. Yeah, it was a weird experience. I don't even remember like feeling anything. It was just like tears. So that was awful, but I got over it anyway. It's just hard to watch again.
And then we mentioned the Green Sea. And I know you also have a short film that's in progress was just completed. And I know you've received a couple of scripts. Is there anything else in the works for you at the moment?
There is, yeah. There's another film that's doing the rounds at festivals at the moment called Calm with Horses that you mentioned. So that's just new. That's newer than Float Like a Butterfly. And there are four other shorts, I do believe, and a music video. And one of them is a short that's hopefully being made into a feature at some point once funding comes through. Yeah, do you want me to list off things?
Yeah, you don't have to list everything, but
yeah. There's one called Troubled Times, written and directed by an American director, Jared Crowell, and that was a lot of fun to shoot. I worked with Ferdy Pilo Walsh on that, who was the main in Sing Street, if you've seen that. And a film called Cunis that has been doing the rounds of festivals and got it actually won Best Short Film Festival at Cork Film Festival, which Float also won at, so that was nice to have like two awards in the space of 2 years at the same film festival. I think that won as well at one of the festivals that was shortlisted. Long listed for the Oscars or something like that. But yeah, that's a few of them anyway.
What do you enjoy most about going to festivals?
Definitely meeting new people and seeing the places and coming in contact with people who have been touched by the story. Yeah, it's always amazing to see how the story touches people in different ways, and how universal it is. There's so many people who resonated with it. Like at Toronto, I just can't stress enough. Hey, it was really loved in Toronto, and it was just such an amazing experience. Yeah, it's so different to like a TV release of something. It's so different. You have people in the moment, and especially at Toronto Film Festival, the people who go to that, like the attendees of that festival, they're there for the art, they're there for the stories. They're not there to see the celebrities or anything like that. They're there to be moved. Yeah, yeah, I think that's beautiful.
Your favorite memory of when you came to Canada?
Ooh, that's funny. We had one night where everybody who was involved with the film that was in Canada, there's two memories. We just had, we went to this place, I forget what it was called, but it was this place that, I don't eat meat or anything like that, and I'm usually not able to eat that much in places, but we went to this one place and got everything on the menu because it was all, like, friendly for me, and, like, it was just such a good atmosphere, and, like, one of the art director, she went over to one of the people sitting at a table next to us and went over and was like asking, so what is good on the menu? What do you think is the best option? And it was just crazy. It was like children running around, and we just acted like children for like 6 days. That was such a good night. And then the day after our first screening, we went to the pool in the restaurant that we were staying in, and we did like synchronized swimming, like myself, the director, her wife, and Dara. it was a good time, and we have a video of it actually. We should probably like put that on the internet or something. That'd be funny. And Carmel and Tom, I got married in Toronto, so I'm sure that was their favorite memory of Toronto, but I wasn't there for that, so I do remember them telling me, though, and that was a good memory.
Well, the film is Float Like a Butterfly, and I believe it's being released internationally. I think it's next week, within the next week or so. But it's a fantastic film. I encourage all the listeners, both in Canada and all my friends in Ireland and the UK, if you haven't seen it yet, to watch it. Hazel, yeah. Dute, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to speak to you.
Cheers. Once again, that was my conversation with actress Hazel Dute, star of the Irish film Float Like a Butterfly, which is on demand now, as well as Apple TV. You'll also notice that I'm experimenting with a new intro, courtesy of my friends over at Mnet Radio in Vancouver, BC. Lance Shilka is the head of that outlet, and they kindly air Endeavor's interviews. So let me know what you think about the new intro, and make sure you tune in for the next episode when I'll be speaking with Mike Reno from Canadian band Loverboy. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Artists like to have a lot of sex.